Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, and you're listening to Ever Beyond Radio, and you're listening to me, JP. Tonight, I am Ayurvedi with Chéline Détrault. Chéline Détrault. I keep saying, you know, I love to say with a French accent, or with my father's French Canadian accent. And, it's just fun. It's just like voices. Anyway, doing voices. And who'd have thought? Anyway, it's, lovely to have you here, Chéline. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Actually, my father would appreciate your accent. He's from the Quebec province in Canada.
Is he a Quebecois as well?
Ah, oui.
All right. So
that's as far as I go. Yeah.
Maybe they knew each other, because like there's only about 10 people in Quebec, aren't there? And they all speak like this. They all have this weird accent.
That's exactly what
Stay
it sounds
thirsty.
Like.
It's that Actually, yeah, my father had a friend who lived in Bognor Regis in southern England. Yes, there is a place called Bognor Regis. We used to go for holidays every year. Oh, are we going to Bognor? How exciting, Mum. For 3 weeks. 3 weeks in Bognor. That's really exciting. Oh, my God. Anyway, So French Canadians and Quebecois. So yeah, so there we go. We have the French Canadian father, in common. And, I wonder how many other French Canadian, half Canucks are there out there. Anyway.
Well, there's quite a few where I live out here in New England.
Cause they don't go that far. They kind of spread slowly by osmosis. About the year 3000, they'll be down in Mexico going, aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we finally found the place.
That's right. Hey, it's not cold down here. Why don't we move down here?
Exactly. Although, you know, personally, I'm not a big fan of lots of heat. So the winter suits me just fine. So, and you know, there's certain types of people that will gravitate towards the cold, and certain types of people that'll gravitate towards the warmth. And you know, when people reach their more elderly years, I don't know how it happens in England, because it's pretty rainy and chilly there a lot. Or in Scotland, similar kind of atmosphere.
People turn to oak here. Their skin goes like,
it's effective.
Like bark.
Well, here a lot of people will move from New England down to Florida, or, you know, from other parts of the northern parts of the states down to Arizona. They're called snowbirds. And so when people reach their elderly years, they generally will feel the cold more. Is that, do you find that similar over out in your way as well?
I'm sorry to say, but any female that I know will always feel the cold. They, you know, it's like the draft chases them around the house.
Actually, I agree. I'm not so great with the cold dance.
They do this thing and it really gets to me. You know, if anybody wants to be my girlfriend, you must not do this thing, which is like whenever just the slightest amount of cold, they go, it's like some whinnying horse. Like, where did that come from? Just put a jumper on. God's sake, the cardigan, anything, a coat. Go to the, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. I'm not a fan of drafts either, but it does speak to a person's constitution, kind of the climate that they're attracted to or the season. You know, a lot of people who live in the four season climate will have a certain season that they are attracted to. And that can often correspond to their constitution. Of course, I'm speaking Ayurvedically.
And of course we are in spring, which is, well, you know, I was born in spring. I was born in March And
were you in Aries?
I'm the end of Pisces.
Okay.
So March 18th. So it used to be when I lived in England at 51 degrees north that by the time my birthday came, it never snowed. You know, it would always snow until my birthday. And now we could be in June. Let's put it this way. Snowed last week in Abbeymoor. That's just down the road here. So, but anyway, sure. Meanwhile, back to spring constitutionality.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. So, just for, if there are any new listeners to what you and I have been talking about for the past several episodes, I like to talk about Ayurveda, and Ayurveda is a traditional healing science that was originally from India, and it's certainly over 5,000 years old, if not older than that. We just don't have a lot of recorded texts beyond the Vedas, like the Rig Veda and Atharveda and that kind of thing. Charak Samhita, those are some of the texts. But it's a healing science that is very reflective of our natural world, and there's a strong understanding that people are not separate from nature, and we are absolutely a part of it. And so everything that is out in nature is also reflected within us. So since we're reaching the springtime, kind of in our hemisphere of the world, I think in Australia, they're probably in, what, is it fall? I guess whatever the opposite is.
Yeah, whatever we're on the other side of, yeah.
But so, since you and I are both experiencing spring, we'll stick with that for now.
But we do have now two very regular listeners from New Zealand and Australia. So
wonderful.
We have to give them a shout out. So
I know,
could do an Antipodean section maybe towards the end, just so, you know, just to give them a quick reflection. But also, they could also do is listen to our autumn show.
That's true.
Which is in the archives. And on my archives as well, which are free.
Wonderful. I've been feeling connected to Australia more because of Mary Rodwell and James Gilliland. I've sort of been really appreciating because James Gilliland, even though he's in the States, he just came back from Australia. So he did a couple of talks about his experiences there. So
did he? Yes. Did he talk about the petroglyphs, the hieroglyphs that they found?
He did.
That's a really exciting idea.
Yes.
And to me, this says, all right, it's not Egyptian. The Egyptians can't own that.
Right.
It's not Egyptian, it's because it comes from elsewhere, from
exactly.
my perspective. And they just happen to hang out in Australia and hang out in Egypt and also do weird carvings in South America.
Exactly. All these places in the world that are so far apart from each other, it would be hard for humans as a culture to keep it all connected because of the distance. Yeah, it's wonderful.
But if you're coming from another place, it just makes perfect sense that you might have more than one settlement, and you might do the same thing everywhere.
Exactly.
You know, you might build pyramids, and you might have certain cultural forms or cultural structures that work the same way.
Which is why art is important.
Exactly.
Right? Because, yes, exactly. So, but, so back to spring. So, according to Ayurveda, we're a reflection of our natural world, and the seasons have an impact on us, and the change of the seasons have an impact on us. And then there are also certain qualities within each season. So when you think of spring, particularly in your climate and my climate, some of the qualities I think are like very moist, muddy, wet, new growth. It's a lot to do with new growth kind of coming up from the earth. There's a lot of heaviness because of that muddy quality. There's cloudiness. If you think of, water with mud in it, which are two, water and earth are the two main elements of spring. You think of cloudiness. So that's a quality. There's also stickiness. If you think of mud can be quite sticky when it's just starting to dry up a little bit, has sort of a sticky quality to it. So all of these qualities we can actually find within ourselves, particularly if we have an imbalance that's kind of brewing. And there are different, there's herbal medicines, there's daily practices that you can do to help balance these qualities. So at the juncture of each season, and we've talked about this before, it's a great time to do Rutucharya, which is a type of cleanse and rejuvenation. A lot of people now, I don't know if this happens to you, JP, but a lot of people at the change of the season from winter to spring. In wintertime, of course, everything is frozen up. Everything is sort of still and frozen and cold. There's a little bit of warmth that's added in the springtime, which that coldness is still cold, but it begins to melt. So if we think about what's happening in our bodies, whatever has been held still in our body begins to melt. And depending on your constitution, that could be, you know, a lot of congestion and runny noses and coughs. A lot of mucus. So when you think spring, think mucus. Isn't that a lovely thought?
Oh, you just put the such great. Anyway, but it's the sticky, like there's not quite enough water to go round, isn't it? There's like,
well, the water is actually starting to become a little more available because it's melting from the winter time. And there are three main doshas associated with the seasons, and so the dosha associated with spring is the Kapha dosha. And so Kapha is, I would say, a main quality that imbibes the elements of water and earth. And then the qualities that I was just talking about, like stickiness, cloudiness, heaviness, softness, coolness. These are all qualities inherent in Kapha. And those are similar qualities that we also see during the springtime, particularly when related to the season prior to it, which is winter. And then we also see these qualities coming out within our bodies and our minds as well. So a person that normally has a lot of mucus in their system, it'll definitely be rearing its head right now. So, you know, if you have any listeners that are having chronic sinus congestion or really fogginess in the head, like a heaviness or a dullness in the head, congestion in the lungs, these are all qualities of Kapha that really can manifest in the springtime.
All right, so what do people do about it? Because that the worst thing is to have all this glippy old glip. I call it glip. I have my own words for things. Yeah, you have your words. You have your Ayurvedic words. You know, you have Sanskrit. I got my JP. I realized that I speak my own language. It's like a lot of little autistic kids do that as well. And it's like that I make these vocal sounds that, you know, eventually become words, and glip is one of them. And, you know, it's not a word that's accepted in the English dictionary, but it definitely sums up.
It does
that
sum
mucus-y
up.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Glip.
Yeah.
It's also the sound. You know, when you have one of these horror movies, is when the alien first appears, you hear the glip. Yeah? You know what I'm saying? That's sound. That's the glip.
To me, glip kind of talks about, many qualities of Kapha. It makes me think of like, stickiness and
it's
heaviness.
Gloopy.
Yeah.
It's drippy.
Yeah, sticky and mushy and cold. Ugh. So what are some things you can do about it? Well, so you want to think about qualities that are opposite of the qualities we were just talking about. To get rid of the glippiness, you want to think about warmth. You want to think about movement. So exercise, even if it's, you know, just gentle walks in the morning. The morning time between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. is also Kapha time. So that's our kind of most sluggish, sticky kind of time of day. So you want to alleviate that by actually doing some form of movement, walking outside, getting the lungs moving, using a lot of warm spices can help. So like fresh ginger tea would be helpful. A really great simple practice that people could do is to take a half a cup of warm water in the morning with a quarter to a half of fresh lemon juice, because lemons are quite warming. And then also the temperature of the warm water will help to move your digestion and to get the mucus moving and flowing out of the body. So that's a really easy practice to do.
Last night, I have to say, my girlfriend came over and she was like, oh, I'm so tired. So I made her an alchemical dinner, that that had all shades of red in it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, it's like it had like paprika and actually sweet pepper and paprika powder and then hot paprika powder and then chili powder and, you know, cayenne pepper, all the different levels of hot spice. Just, you know, just, and cinnamon, and, you know, the brown and, you know, the orange and turmeric and the range of reds. And, although she said, oh, I don't want any sauce, she lapped it up. She loved it.
And then she was up till 3 a.m. Yeah. Much to your glee. Well, you know, though, that's a really good point because color therapy is used quite often in Ayurveda and all of the spices that you're talking about, just by their color alone, can indicate some of their qualities. So all the spices that you used obviously had warming qualities. The red pepper itself, even though it's a little sweet, it's also quite heating. So if she was feeling sluggish at all, yeah, you definitely gave her a boost with that little meal. So yeah, color therapy is used, so that's great. You could even have a person wear a certain color, so warming colors for someone that has like chronic congestion, the cold congestion, not the red inflamed type of congestion, the one with a lot of heavy cold mucus. You want the person to consider wearing warming colors, so reds, oranges, warm rust colors. Those are beneficial. I'm trying to think what else you could do for kapha. It's funny, I rarely run into kapha patients or patients that have prolonged kapha imbalances because it's really hard to get people who have kapha imbalances into my practice because it's hard for them to get motivated. Does that make sense? So it really
it's a double problem, isn't it? You'd be well in a sort of British council estate. Because all the kids there are like dripping with their snot.
Oh,
they're glipping.
They're glipping. We have to get them away from their desks and outside.
That's right. That would be a long story. It's a long story.
I'm sure.
So meanwhile, let's just have a quick Antipodean turnaround for this one. So in the Antipodes, they're going from summer to winter.
Right.
Is there a similar kind of process that is going on? It's not glippy. It's more, is it dried? Is it like, it's just waiting for, it's thirsty in some way.
That's a good observation. Yes. So summertime or the dosha related to the summer months is pitta. And pitta is primarily fire element and a little bit of water. And then once you go from summer, it would actually be summer to autumn. Right? As opposed to summer to winter. Because we have that season of fall, of autumn. So it would be from the qualities of heat and a little bit of wetness, but a lot of heat, going from a lot of mobility and coolness. And like you said, that drying quality. So if anyone has a lot of heat that's kind of storing up during the summer, what will happen in the fall is you may see a lot of red inflamed skin rashes start popping up during this time. And this is particularly for people, if some of your listeners can kind of go back and say, oh, yes, every year at this time of year, I get this weird thing, whether it be a rash or, you know.
Yeah, what's this thing about my feet and my legs? It's like I'm standing in spot liquid and these red, itchy spots come up on my legs like I've got socks. Red spotted white socks.
So that happens at the same time every year.
Kind of when it gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because I've got parasites in there and they go, oh, it's hot. let's have a party.
Let's move to the surface. Yeah. Let's move to the surface. Often, skin issues will flare up either during the summer or the transition from summer to autumn. And so in the feet and the extremities, lower digestive system. There could also be some stagnation happening with the liver. All of our livers have been greatly taxed from lovely environmental hazards and pollutants that we've been having to deal with and cope with. So, but if you're a fiery person, generally you're going to have you're going to see problems with your skin. You're also going to have a tendency towards that fire coming out, and it may come out more in the transition between the summer months and autumn. Whenever there's a transition in seasons, our whole bodies get thrown about a little bit. They sort of settle into a season, and then when there's shifts, it kind of throws everything out a little bit, and then we have to readjust the new season. So yeah, it would be curious to hear if you do have listeners that are finding, yeah, I get this rash or my eczema flares up, you know, in the summer months or when I transition from summer to fall. There's often tendencies for patterns to happen like that, for people. And so, you know, there's cleanses that people can do each at the transition of each season. So from summer to fall, there's a period of time where you can do internal oleation that gets everything nice and liquid in your body, all the ama that's built up in the tissues. And then you eat a very specific protein, vegetarian diet for a number of days. You take specific herbs. It helps to scrub all this ama out of your body. And then there are practices to eliminate, all of the ama out of your body. And then so for that, the summer to the fall, often cooling herbs and foods can really help, to help with that transition if you have excess heat in your body. So hopefully that'll help the southern hemisphere folks out a bit, so we can have some comparison there. I actually just thought of another good practice that people can do in the springtime, and it happens at spring cleaning. People talk about spring cleaning. It's a great time to declutter. So to actually get objects, material objects out of your house, ones that you haven't been using, it's a really great time to clear. So if you clear your house, that's going to have an effect on your body as well. There's a sister science to Ayurveda called Vastu. Have you heard of this, JP?
No, but here's the thing. Just before you go into that, I was brought up Jewish, as a lot of people are aware, and I now realize that there's a thing that Jewish people do that, you know, is not often publicized, but like you hear some things about it, but there's a thing called Passover. And every Passover, you stop eating yeast-based products and you tidy your house up.
Now, and that's around the springtime.
Yeah, and it's absolutely, it's the first full moon after the spring equinox.
Yeah.
And perfect. I realized, you know, just like 10 days ago, no, it was last year sometime, I thought, how am I on? Now I know what it's about. You know, I used to just like, blah, you know, because I didn't know about yeast. Like, blah.
Well, plus you're
give me a beer. I'm completely overtaken by the nung.
Yes.
Nunged.
Plus you were a rebellious teenager, weren't
of
you?
Of course, one has to be. It's duty. Even though your parents are sweet and nice, it's still duty. Oh, I hate you. Anyway.
Which is the transition in a person's life from kapha. Yeah. So kapha is also sweet. Mm-hmm. To pitta, which is fiery. So when children are going through their rebellious stage as teens, they're transitioning from their childhood, which is kapha, to their teen and adult years, which is all about fire. It's all about doing. It's all about action. And then after your adult years, after menopause, and for men after age 60, you start reaching the vata time of life, which is air and ether. And that tends to, it should be a time of letting go of material possessions and action and spending more time going inward and exploring the spiritual life. That is a good bit. I've tried to start that early.
You know,
but,
this is one of the reasons that I live in Scotland, because there's a long oblat bit. There's a long bit of that. So tell me, listen, I've had, now I've got you here, right? I've got this pain. How many times have people cornered you at a party? Because, you know, it used to be, I was a computer programmer. gone by, the first thing was, I used to say, people say, oh, hey, this is in the 70s, or I was like, ah, hi, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm a computer program. They go, oh, and kind of wander off somewhere. And then somewhere along the line, people start getting into the internet, and then there was Y2K, and everybody started, and there was iPhones, and then there was iPads, and there was, and now everybody's like, oh yeah, yeah. And so nowadays when I say, oh, I'm a computer programmer, I go, oh really? I've got this computer, right?
Yeah. Like, or how can you help me optimize my website?
That's exactly. Yeah. So, do you get that when, probably you don't go to parties where people are drinking and like chatting you up and all that. Yeah. But,
the good old days.
But, how is your conversations with strangers when they ask you, what do you do? And you say that, what's the kind of response that you get? I love this.
The response I get is, oh, and then not much else after that. Or sometimes they want to know a little bit, but then, it's hard to get people to stay with me on the explanation. There's slight confusion. Sometimes there's interest. But there's usually interest if the person is in pain and they haven't found like a way to seek relief. Like they've tried other ways and it hasn't really helped them. Or if they have, something chronic going on that they just can't really find relief.
So what we call acute cases?
Well, it's the opposite. Acute is when something happens suddenly. So it's usually, people that have something that really sticks with them that they can't seem to get rid of, and they've tried many other things. You know, it's not the first thought that people have, oh, I'm going to go see an Ayurvedic practitioner. It's usually, that's usually the last gasp. Which is unfortunate, but that will change over time. Well, it's not the last gasp in parts of India. That's usually the first.
Yeah, it's the first thing that people do.
Although, you know, with the invasion of Britain, no offense, in India.
None taken.
allopathic medicine sort of took over their healing tradition quite a bit. And now they're sort of trying to balance everything between the traditional medicine and allopathic medicine. So I think Ayurveda is starting to become a much more respected practice now, which is good. It's sort of recovering from that invasion, so which is really important. But, so Vastu, can I talk about Vastu?
Please, now you may. take the floor.
I'm excited about Vastu because it's something that I've wanted to learn a little bit more about, and I just came back from a conference where there was a presenter speaking about Vastu, and Vastu is a sister science to Ayurveda. So there are some sciences that work beautifully together. So Vastu and Ayurveda work wonderfully. Ayurveda and Jyotish is the Vedic version of astrology, those work beautifully together. So Vastu is the practice and the science of setting up a living space or an office space or any kind of space that people inhabit in accordance with nature. So it's similar to Feng Shui.
Geomancy, we call that.
Well, oh, okay.
Under the terms of, you know, all different things are different forms of geomancy.
Yes. And we did talk about that a little bit, how, you know, different practices you can do to help alleviate, you know, electromagnetic frequencies kind of thing.
Exactly, yes.
So I've been really chomping at the bit to learn a little more about this, because I do have a few patients that have these illnesses that are somewhat mysterious and are not being helped fully by Ayurvedic medicine. So when that happens, you're like, I either have to look at your chart, your astrological chart, or there could be something happening in how your home is set up that is creating this really persistent imbalance. So I think Vastu is extremely valuable. I don't know how much is practiced in Scotland and England, but It's still quite esoteric here in the States, although people are more familiar with feng shui. That science, which I believe is derived from Vastu.
Yeah, we have a thing here. We call them the Michael and Mary lines. No, is it
okay.
Michael and Mary lines?
I haven't heard of it.
Michael and Mary. Yeah,
are they ley lines?
Yeah,
or?
These are the major ley lines, and then we also have Hartman and Curry lines. Have you got those?
Probably, but I'm not sure. It doesn't ring a bell. The terms don't ring a bell.
The Hartman grid was discovered by Dr. Hartman, and the Curry lines were discovered by Dr. Curry. The magnetic grid lines. Yeah, I know.
It's okay. I'm sorry.
it's just the thing, you know. Anyway, so the Hartman lines are literally the north-south grid.
Okay.
And they pass through every point on the planet, and they're like a stripe that goes north, south, and east, west, and they alternate in pairs of two, or in pairs or in triples. So you got like two and three and two and three and two and three, and that goes across the globe, north to south, and they're spaced about 12 to 15 feet apart. Okay. And there's a similar grid that goes north to south. All right, that's the Hartman grid.
Interesting.
And then the Curry grid is much more wider spaced. It's just a single thread and goes around at an angle of 45 degrees. And they're about, say, 20 to 30 feet apart. And when you get the two crossing over, and when those two cross over on top of an underground stream, and somebody sleeps there, they usually die.
Yeah, I could see
yeah,
how that.
You get, you're getting that build up of energies there.
Yeah,
so you can
right.
see the different colored threads. So the Curry lines are kind of when I learned about this, I was sleeping with the Curry line going right across my belly.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a stomach ulcer.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
The Curry line, is that the east? Is that an east-west?
That's the diagonal one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, with Vastu, you have to find true north. So is that, it's like 800 degrees or 800 miles away from magnetic north? Does that ring a bell?
Well, magnetic north moodles around a bit, but true north is grid north.
Okay.
So
that's what that's what you base your readings off of, true north.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, this is all new information. I'm so interested.
Let's talk about north, right? There's three, because this is useful for everybody. There are three norths, all right? So if you imagine that there was a stick poked through the earth, right? Like you might stick a skewer through a tomato. The point where it comes through, that stick is called the axis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the axis of, orientation. So if you were to extend that stick all the way through and it went light years, it would eventually go somewhere near the star called Polaris.
Okay.
All right. And that's what we call the North Star. So that's the axial north.
And that remains fixed? Is that like something that?
No.
It doesn't warble?
No, it warbles.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Right, so that's how we're floating in space.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in alignment with the sun's magnetic field.
Right? Okay.
Okay. And then we have our own, magnetic north and south, right? And they move.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now it has been thought that when magnetic north and axial north and pole, and so you've also got grid north. Right, grid north is what we would call the North Pole, and magnetic anomalies happen there, and it was feared that the grid north and magnetic north would meet, and then the poles would flip,
right?
Whatever that means,
right?
I think that the planetary poles flip because of external circumstances, personally.
Yes,
so that was the thing. So there's three different norths, and when you're trying to steer, unless you've got GPS, you see GPS is independent of the grid. And that's why they instituted the GPS, because you couldn't fly over the North Pole because you could never know where you are. because the compass would be just spinning around. So how the heck do you navigate, right? And the navigations were freaking out until they got the grid, the GPS satellite system set up.
That's fascinating. So I'm thinking Vastu, it must relate to what?
Yeah, so anyway, those are the Norths. That's how we did the North. So Vastu
Vastu must relate north, to the, yeah. this. Yes, exactly. Planetary. And also the, in relation to the sun's magnetic rays, because it's used a lot. You know, the sun's, it works with different rays. So ultraviolet rays, infrared rays, gamma rays, they're all associated with a certain direction. So the south is associated with infrared rays. And the west is associated with gamma rays, which are considered destructive rays. And then northeast is associated with ultraviolet rays, which are considered creative and life-giving. So, you know, one is supposed to align their house in a specific way to have that flow of energy, of the directions, and also of the elements working cohesively within their home. So if you have any kind of misalignment in your house, it will affect your home, your health, it will affect your relationships, it will affect your prosperity and your health. So it's a really important thing to work with. So I look forward to learning more about that. So part of Vastu, which is also part of Ayurveda, is to really focus on decluttering your house during this Kapha season in the spring. So, you know, my next goal is to clean out our basement. So when you store things in your basement, if you have one, I don't think you have a lot of basements in Scotland.
No, our so houses wet. Are built on pieces of rock, 30 yes. miles thick.
I believe it. Yeah.
With just a bit of moss on the top, you know.
So where would you store, if you were a pack rat, where would you store things? Just in your house? Not in the basement, since you don't have.
I've got a load of storage stuff here, because I used to be in a band, and I used to have the PA. I've got like 6 pairs of speakers in this room.
Oh wow!
Not including the studio that I'm surrounded by, you know, mixing desks and monitors and screens and things.
So, knowing what I know of you, I'm sure you have a lot of protective. Things set up in place to
I was talking about this.
You were talking about it.
Shungite. We use shungite for the EMF protection.
Is that made of copper, or because copper is used in Vastu to help repel electromagnetic frequencies?
I love copper. I buy copper sheets and play with.
Well,
it
I see this picture of you. Yeah,
exactly. That picture of me is me holding.
It's a little copper pyramid.
Yeah, it's I made it from a copper sheet. Here we are. I'm just turning the camera on. It's only a small one.
Oh, it's lovely.
It's a tetrahedron, made of copper sheet and with the copper foil along the edges to stop the sharp bits cutting your fingers.
Yes.
But, hey, check these out, Chaelin. This is shungite, right? It's a black stone, and these are 2 pyramids. I've got 3 sizes now. And it's an we've been talking about shungite all the time, and it's an EMF field protector.
Mm-hmm.
That means that it's kind of like a vacuum cleaner. It just pulls all the harsh EMF. It's that really really high frequency that does you damage. Yeah. Mm. That they talk about, you know, EMF sickness and things. These things just suck it up. They just.
Well, and so you said it's a stone. It's a type of stone, or is it a type of crystal?
It's a form of carbon.
Oh, carbon.
That is not graphite, and it's not diamond. It's another form called fullerene, and it's a spherical. We've been talking about this all night. It's a spherical molecule called a buckyball or fullerene, Buckminster fullerene. Have you heard of this?
It's
a form of carbon called or graphene that is in a sphere, and it occurs naturally in one place only. There's a little place, but there's one large deposit of it that just sits on the surface, and it's in Russia, Karelia. And well, you can get all sorts of things. I was showing before, I have a tile. So they use it for treating PTSD in Russia, and the people who live in by the Shunga River live to, like, you know, 4,000 years old and are all have their own teeth. No, no. But they live a long time. They're very happy and healthy. The water is clean. They use it for cleaning water. They just chuck the stones in the water, and it cleans the water.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it never needs recharging.
Water, that's such a major element of Kapha dosha that it makes me think of, there's an herb, and it's not a plant, but it's a mineral pitch called Shilajit. Have you heard of that? It's used to clear the channels of the body.
This is another black material that draws things to it. So talk a little bit about this, because you think black and you think, oh, evil and all that, but it's not. It's that there is, what is it about the black materials that draw the poisons to them? Tell me about that.
It could be like attracting like. So, you know, Shilajit is a very old mineral and plant pitch taken from the Himalayas in India. So it's decomposed plants and minerals that have been pressurized over a long period of time. So it creates a substance that is used to clear any blockages in the body. And I think the way that it works is that it attracts. So it attracts a similar quality to it, but yet, somehow there's a sort of, magic to a lot of these herbs. There's a term for that called prabhav. Their herbs have a certain quality because it's magical. There's no like rational reasoning. There's just this magic to these herbs where they do a special action. So Shilajit will clear the channels of the body from any blockages. And yeah, I think the kind of heavy, dense, sticky quality of Shilajit attracts materials of that ilk from the body and helps you to eliminate. But yet there's some kind of, because it's Shilajit comes from the earth and the pressures of the earth, there's that sort of love that's imbued in that material. So that's probably what makes it healing as opposed to destructive. Although, you know, if you use Shilajit improperly, it can create imbalance. So, you know, everything needs to be done with awareness. I don't know if that's the same for Shungite. You know, if you use that improperly, if there's any, well, maybe if you throw it at someone's head, that would be using Shungite.
The thing about Shungite, it doesn't like being treated in a negative fashion.
So used for it's malefic quite, purposes?
It's quite,
is that what you mean?
Yeah, it doesn't like it. The field will fail for you. You know, it likes to serve. It likes to be in service and it likes to serve well. And it's just good stuff.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it sounds beautiful.
Because, each of those molecules, you know, with 60 atoms in it, each of those molecules is like a tiny universe.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, it's a stem cell of life.
That's beautiful.
Because it's carbon. We're carbon-based life forms. Mm. There are 60 carbon atoms. Maybe that's what a soul group is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wonderful. I'm sold. I'm getting my 60.
Yes. Cosmicreality.net is Nancy's place where she has some, and she'll be able to send you some very quickly.
Okay.
Because it takes weeks to come from Russia.
But, oh, that makes sense, of course. Yeah. So there are actual, there's gem therapy in Ayurveda. So for Kapha dosha, there's certain gems, and this is also should be done in relationship to a person's astrological chart. There's gems that are more beneficial than others, depending on how your chart is placed. But for Kapha, the warmer gems, you know, so if you think of garnet and ruby, those are going to be more beneficial for any kind of Kapha imbalance. You think of the warming quality of these gems. And then, you know, on the opposite end, for someone who has a lot of problems with fire, you want to use greener gems. So emerald or peridot, those would be helpful. But again, it also depends on your chart. So that's why working sort of in tandem with Ayurveda, Jyotish, and Vastu can really bring about a more complete type of healing for the person. So that's what I got on that. But for Kapha, there's a place in the body, and we talked about this earlier, where Kapha manifests and kind of hangs out. Kapha dosha is related to mucus, or what did you call it?
Glip.
Mucus is produced in the stomach, goes up into the lungs, and it creates congestion in the lungs, the throat, the nasal passages, and the mind. So it's sort of like the upper half of the body is related to Kapha dosha. So there's some good practices you can do to help clear Kapha. One would be neti, using the neti pot. I don't know if you know what that is.
A neti pot. Now,
yes.
My imagination may run wild.
So please
explain what a neti pot is and why I might stick it up my nose or put it in any other place, you know.
Yes, this is just for your nose. So it's a ceramic vessel that has a long spout, and you use warm water with a pinch or two of refined sea salt. So you make like a saline solution, and on a daily basis in the morning, during Kapha time, it's really beneficial. You pass the water up one nostril and it'll naturally fall out of the other nostril. So you're gently clearing your sinuses.
All right. Now just let me say, saline is what tears are.
Correct.
Don't make it stronger than tears. Or you'll hurt yourself. You'll burn your nose.
So I tell people, everyone has a slightly different salinity. If you feel if you feel a burning, that's generally too much salt. If you feel
back off on the salt.
Yes. If you feel a stinging quality, and it's not that big of a deal. If you feel a stinging quality, you actually need more salt. So there's a difference between the stinging and the burning. But that's not really good promotion for doing neti, is it?
You just got to do it safely. And you don't want somebody to do it and then write, oh, I never did it because it hurt too much.
How to
do it right, how to do it carefully and be gentle with yourself, you know.
Right. So I could give a recipe. I could say, okay, fill up your neti pot with warm water and then put in half a teaspoon, but that may not be correct for some people, so you have to play around with it a little. I usually have people start with two pinches, meaning you take all the fingers on one hand and you gather the salt in a pinch. So you put two of those into the neti pot and you stir it around so all the salt dissolves. You don't want any little salt crystals getting stuck in your nose.
That's another way of hurting yourself.
Yeah. And then you just simply, you tilt your head and I do this in the shower, obviously, so you don't get water everywhere, water and mucus everywhere. You tilt your head to the side and you put the spout in one nostril and the water will normally flow out the other nostril. And it may take a couple of times, especially if you're really congested. It may not work as smoothly at first, but it's a practice. It's something that you just keep attempting to do. And it can really help people who have chronic allergies, chronic sinusitis. If you can try to initiate that as a more of a daily practice, it's a great preventative for those kind of things. If you do have a little bit of just the beginnings of that sinus pain, not to the point where you have a fever, it's before that happens, you can actually put a pinch of turmeric powder in your neti, and that will help wonderfully with the inflammation. Turmeric is just a beautiful herb. It's a great kapha balancing herb. So it's great to use in the springtime. So yeah, I would definitely suggest using neti because that clears a part of your body that will naturally accumulate kapha or mucus. Let's see. And there's one other practice. You can actually do a daily, eye wash. I don't know if you have eyeglass cups, over where you are, but you can buy these eyeglass cups in like a local pharmacy.
And or the lid of an Optrex.
Oh, what's that?
Do you have Optrex?
I don't think so. I don't know what that is.
It's essentially a witch hazel solution, very weak witch hazel that you you wash your eyes and it comes with a little cap that is shape over the eye and you put it over there.
Yeah, I'm sure it's similar. Yeah. And witch hazel is astringent, so that will help to pull any excess.
When you've had a heavy night and you want to make less bloodshot, put an astringent and it tightens up your area.
Yeah. You can again use just a gentle saline solution. And if you don't have an eyeglass, what I will do sometimes is just cup water in my hand and blink the water up into my eye. That's a really effective way to do that. You can use rose water. That's any rose water that is used for cooking, one that is obviously chemical-free. You just want pure rose hydrosol. You can mix that with a little of the saline water, and that will help to clear and cool your eyes. That's a really nice practice. So those are good daily practices to do to help pacify that kapha dosha, the mucus that can accumulate. But it's good to know, that our mucus gets created in the stomach. A lot of people think it gets created in the lungs, but it doesn't. It travels to the lungs from the stomach. And, it has a protective quality, so it's needed. But when it gets out of balance, that's when we start getting the congestion and the coughs.
But that might be because of irritation. I mean, there's a lot of things that irritate our lungs that cause us to cough and,
happens first, and then mucus comes in to help soothe the irritation.
Exactly. So here's the thing that lots of people are calling it, chemtrail flu.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a few words about chemtrail flu and what we do about aluminium and heavy metals? And
yes.
I'm not talking Metallica. Oh, I mustn't even mention their name because of their copyright. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Cancel.
Yeah, cancel. So, heavy metals.
Yeah, anything that's going to accumulate in the body will accumulate often in the liver. It will accumulate in our fat tissue. But before it gets to that point, you were just talking about lung irritation. Yes, it's going to affect our respiration because we're breathing in these chemicals and irritants. So doing neti would be a great preventative measure for that. And keeping the lungs strong. So there's a mullein leaf. This probably grows wild where you are. So, having a mullein tea would be good to keep the lungs nice and strengthened and strong so that you have a strong immune system. It's almost like getting behind the illness. So, okay, chemtrails happen and people get these symptoms. It's helpful to try to find ways to almost get behind that and boost your immune system. So, briefly you and I were talking about supplementation. Normally I'm not a huge fan of that, because I have a concern about, all of us becoming dependent on needing supplements and then boom, they can get taken away. I don't know. I just have this mild concern, but in the meantime, I do definitely recommend supplementing with vitamin D3 and, that can help protect our cells, the cell walls. It helps revitalize and rejuvenate cell growth. It definitely helps prevent any cancerous growths from happening. Now, it is hard because exercise is so beneficial for clearing the lungs, but yet if you're exposed to chemtrails, then you're going to be breathing in those particulates. But you can try to be aware of times of day when you're actually viewing these things in the sky and try to do your walks and exercises when they're not so prevalent. I don't know how it happens for you where you are, if there's certain waves or certain times of day where you feel it's prevalent, but things come and go. So you just have to be aware of your surroundings and what's happening. I think high dosing of vitamin C is good as well. If you can try to find a food-based vitamin C, that would be better. There's an herbal formula called Trifala, which is three fruits that are extremely high in antioxidants and vitamin C. And that can be taken on a daily basis, for very long term, very safely at, about half a teaspoon to a teaspoon of powder. And you can just mix that in half a cup of warm water. And it does taste strong. So you just have to bear with it and take it. Some people take it in pill form, but that's not ideal, but if that's the only way you can take it, that's fine. But Trifla is really good for high antioxidant, high vitamin C, and it also helps to physically remove AMA, and chemtrail particulates would be part of this, from the body. So I would say daily practices are really helpful. And then also what we've talked about in past shows, doing a practice called Panchakarma, which is a very deep kind of cleanse and rejuvenation that you do under care, under other people's care, that can help remove the any kind of effects from chemtrails that have settled deeper into the body. You know, eventually it would reach your nervous system, your liver, your fat tissue. So that's really indicative for the deeper cleanse called Panchakarma. So I don't know if that helps. Do you have any questions about that?
That's brilliant. If anybody wants to ask some questions, you can call into the station. because we're going to take a break.
Oh, yes, it's time.
And have you heard of John McLaughlin?
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. He's a student. He's an American jazz guitar player who was a student of the sitar.
Oh, great.
And so he produced a hybrid guitar that has sitar strings and resonations and things behind him.
Oh, beautiful.
He plays like Ravi. You know how these Ravi Shankars speak? They play really fast. And
yes. Very masterful, yeah.
Very masterful. Anyway, so this is from Passion, Grace, and Fire. This is John McLaughlin with Aspan. You're listening to Warp Spirit Radio. Yes, you are listening to Warp Spirit Radio. Hey, and you're back.
Oh. And you had a nice cup of tea.
I just had a good old slurp while the mic was off. Sorry, you got it in your headphones, but the audience were spared that little delight. That lovely little delight. Anyway, so everybody's invited to call in. Well, exactly, James. Well, that's what we were just talking about, is how do you protect yourself from the chemtrail filth, he says, which is essentially, and it's about a regime. So do you want to just roll that regime by? I mean, what would be the minimum? You know, what would be a really kind of easily affordable in terms of time, concentration, space, etc.?
Mm-hmm.
Like the most basic line. You think neti potting or, you know?
Yeah, I think neti is great. Also the lemon water in the morning.
Lemon water in the morning. That's quite easy, but not lemonade, not like a can of 7-Up.
Nope, just a half a cup of warm water. And you want to make sure it's good quality water if you can. And a half to a quarter fresh lemon juice. Try to get organic if you can. And you just squeeze the juice into the warm water and you drink that the first thing before you eat anything. And so that's a really great way to start to gently detoxify your body and get your digestion going. So that's great. That's a really simple practice. And then neti, you can do that in the morning as well. And you just use warm water. Again, you want to use water that's healthy. You don't want to use tap water that has chemicals in it. So warmed water that's warmed just to body temperature or a little less. You don't want anything too hot, so don't burn your nose. I tend to use, since we have filters on our shower, I use the shower water because that's already warm, but it's not going to be too hot. then you put one or two pinches of sea salt, refined sea salt, in that warm water, and with the neti pot, you can look that up online. Get a ceramic one, not a plastic one. Insert that in one nostril, and you let the water flow up the nostril and out the other. It will happen naturally. And then you fill up the neti pot again, and again with the salt, and then you do the opposite side. And there's tutorials and stuff like that that you can look up on YouTube, so that you can see what that looks like. Those are great practices. And then also, when you feel like the skies are a little clearer, that's a great time to actually do some outdoor exercise. So to get your body moving, that will help you to metabolize and get rid of wastes. Anytime you're sweating and you're breathing at a slightly elevated rate, you're getting rid of wastes. So you're metabolizing them, getting them out of your body. So those are helpful practices, as well as, you know, sending out intention. So, you know, mind and body and spirit obviously affect one another. So try to also keep your intention intact with how you want to protect yourself and your family from these chemtrails.
Excellent, excellent. So that's the most basic protection is literally coat your skin in something sticky to catch the crap, and then well, wash it off.
You could do Abhyanga. You're talking about doing a massage, so doing a daily massage is good. Self massage.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I was thinking a couple of weeks ago, I really want to take care of myself. You know, so I thought, hang on. I was in the shower and I massaged one side of my body with one hand and then the other side of my body with the other hand. It's like the two different parts of me taking care of myself. Is that like a thing that people have done?
So that's a daily practice that's done in Ayurveda. It's usually done with oil. For people who have a lot of kapha dosha in their constitution or if they're dealing with a kapha imbalance, you will use minimal oil, and we usually use organic unrefined sesame oil. And you actually do this before you bathe, and a little bit of the oil will wash off in the shower, and that's fine, but it's actually okay to have a little bit of that oil also remain on your skin because it helps to protect your skin. But when you do the self-massage, and that's basically taking the oil and you lengthwise will rub your limbs, your arms and legs, with the oil, and every time you reach a joint, like your wrist or your elbow or your shoulder, you want to do circular motions around your joints. That keeps everything moving, so there's less chance of stagnation in your body. And that's a great practice because it's really about caring for the self. So any of these practices that you can incorporate, they're important because yes, they're physically helping your body, but it's also, like you said, it's a time when you can care for the self. And that's sort of like the basic, one of the basic, fundamental philosophies of Ayurveda is Ayurveda is used to prevent, illness. It's used to promote health and longevity so that each individual can live out their dharma, which means whatever your life calling is. And of course that will be different for everybody. The self-massage is great. Now you can do it without oil. So if you have a lot of kapha in your system, a lot of stagnation, you can simply just, not use any oil, but for the most part, most people will really enjoy using the oil. It's nourishing and protecting for the body.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. So, thank you, Rosh. I'm doing all voices tonight. Tonight is JB playing.
Sort of talk show hosty a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Oh, well.
I'm happy to talk about, unless there's another question from...
Well, of course there's questions.
Oh, they're coming in.
They're quite animated in the chat room. I don't want to disturb anybody, you know. I don't want to interrupt. But anyway, what have we got here? Joyce is asking, I just read that Shilajit is a detoxifier. Is it right? Gentle? How gentle is it? Be gentle with me, darling.
Be gentle. It's ideal to work with a practitioner, because dosing can, if you overdose on Shilajit, it can be quite heating to the body. So it could create other imbalances if it's used improperly. But it is a beautiful medicine to use and it does clear channels. So it clears stagnation from all the channels of the body. So when I say channel, an example of that would be our urinary system. So someone who has a history of kidney stones, it can help clear, break up. It's a lithotrope, so it literally breaks up the stones in the kidneys so that you can pass them out in manageable bits. or if someone has gallstones, any kind of stagnation or stones in the body. But again, it's a stronger herb, so it is best to use under guidance rather than trying to self-medicate with that one.
Self-medicate with Shilajit. Yeah, don't detox too fast because, yeah, what do you, here's my thing is like, not my problem with detox is every time I do a detox, I get the most stinker and I hate having headaches. I get stinkers of headaches because I like to think, you know, I like to wonder in my mind, in the air, in the planes and in the realms. And if I've got a headache, all I just want to do is go into my bed and under my duvet and like go into oblivion until it stops. So what can help with that? And why do I get headaches? Is it my constitution?
It could be different reasons. It depends on what you were doing before the cleanse. If you have any type of caffeine, any chocolate or tea or anything like that, you're going to be dealing with withdrawal. So that could be one thing to look at. Or if you have any sugar or flour, I don't think you eat too much sugar or flour these days, but your body kind of withdrawing from that can definitely have an effect. And caffeine is a vasodilator. So when you come off of caffeine, you're changing the vasoconstriction of your blood vessels, and that can create a really bad headache. Another reason why people get headaches when they cleanse is that they're not getting enough protein. A lot of people do these like, and I'm not trying to criticize, it's just something that happens. When people do these raw juice fasts or raw juice cleanses, they're not getting enough of complete nutrients, and it can actually create low blood sugar, which can lead to headaches. That's another reason. And then also the detox could be a little bit too strong, like too much too fast. So as your body's detoxifying, you have ama circulating in your blood and the fluids of your body. And that can certainly create inflammation within your body and your nervous system that will also contribute to headaches. So it kind of depends what's going on for the individual and the reasoning why. So there's things you can do before you do an Ayurvedic cleanse to help alleviate any potential symptoms that could come up. There's like preparation by, if you do have a habit of having caffeine, it's a time to take a few weeks to reduce your intake of that. And then you also can take specific herbs that will help to start cleansing that ama from your system before you have to do anything major, any other practices that are going to be an investment or anything that's going to be too taxing for the body. So it can be quite detailed.
So, well, no, it's a very, very good point you're making, Shannon, is that if you're going to do any cleansing at all, you got to make sure that the outer passageways are clear. You know, there's no point in cleaning your sewers if they're blocked at the end.
Exactly.
It just makes the matters worse.
Right.
So,
There's processes of internal oleation. So softening the tissues and the channels and also fomentation. So, doing processes where this could be just a series of warm baths, but also there's a svedna, which is a sweat tent that, is used. This all helps prepare the body for the deeper cleanse. This is all used. I actually use in my practice, I use, a method called Shila Abhyanga, which is Shila is, hot stone and Abhyanga is massage. So I do with my patients, I'll do a hot stone massage. So I'll rub these heavy hot stones on the person's body to start to help soften all the ama in the tissues and to open the channels.
Fan-bloody-tastic.
It is. It really is.
I've had one.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, imagine that with shungite stones. Yes.
Oh, interesting.
It would be fantastic. But the hot stones, because shungite is really tough. Yeah, you can heat shungite up.
That's such a great idea. I want to try that.
That it's
does it spit out heat quickly? Because you can use basalt stones, but I never use them because they spit out the heat. You know, the stones from volcanoes.
All right. Yeah.
I don't use them because they spit the heat out way too fast. It's like a sudden shock of heat that is a little bit too jarring for the body.
Yeah, you want a kind of internal resistance.
I use older stones, like stones that are old in history that have been formed over a long time, and they tend to hold the heat longer and more evenly. They disperse the heat more evenly when you're working.
That's interesting. You see, here's the thing, Shilin, is I live in an area, I always have lived in an area that has people who do this kind of practitioners, like, you know, people like you, I'm quite familiar with a lot of the things that you've been talking about. Well, I don't have the words for it, but, there are people who do these things in this area. You know, I know Lois, lovely woman from Glasgow who does the stone therapy. And it's just, I did it once. Oh, I can just feel it on my bed. Just imagine people, all right? You're laying on a bed and, there's these, it's a bubbling, there's a saucepan just running at just a nice temperature. Just a little bit, you know, was it 45 degrees, 50 degrees?
Whatever is about 5 to 10 degrees warmer than body temperature.
Yeah.
So I don't know Celsius, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just about that. And that you, it's, well, you know, when you put your back in the shower and it just gets that place on the back of your neck where somehow, well, I realize, you know, wow, I can't feel anything there. I turn the heat up. I put it on there. I can't feel anything yet. You know, you turn it up to it's almost burning for the rest of your body, but that little spot on the back of your neck just doesn't get the heat because it's like somehow right. It's all knotted up and frozen as well. You know, it's the vril is trying to battle out there. And, and you know, just one application of a hot stone right there. Oh.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Well, so think about the qualities again. So if you have a muscle that's in spasm, it doesn't get the proper blood flow. So it is actually cooler. It's not as warm. So when you add, warm stone, that's bringing blood back to the area as well as the pressure, that sort of grounded earthy pressure to the muscle. So it helps it to sort of feel nurtured and protected. And so it begins to relax. It's a wonderful therapy. It's very nurturing. You think about, it's like you're using parts of the earth to heal the body and nurture the body. So it's a wonderful treatment. I really love doing it.
Excellent. Oh yeah. Oh, just thinking about it. Just thinking about, you know, lightly oiled and, you know, anyway.
Yeah. I have some stones.
And then even the stones are as well. Yeah. So it's just so,
I have stones from all over. I have some stones from Scotland.
Do you?
So
the lovely bits of granite.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
See, stones from Scotland. You know, on our beach, we have stones that look like Jupiter. It's just amazing. You know how Jupiter and Saturn have these rings in their atmosphere.
Yeah.
They have all these different layers. So they're tumbled in the sea and they have these. Yes, great stuff.
I remember finding stones there that were brick colored that had a lot of holes in them around Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a collection of those. I don't use them in the therapy, but they're completely beautiful.
Mm.
I like gathering stones from different parts whenever I do travel, so that I can learn about what's that place is about and try to use it in the healing. Usually from beaches because they're smoother, so it's better to get
naturally polished. Yes,
right. And I have some river stones as well, so it's great. Are there any other questions?
Let me have a look. Yes, lime. Could adding lime to the soil help with the removal of aluminium from the chemtrails? I believe it's not aluminium, but actually fluoride, says James.
Right. I wouldn't know, unfortunately. I don't know much about the property of lime. He's talking about limestone?
Yeah, lime.
Unfortunately, I don't know. But I think that it is a really great idea to work with reanimating our soils, you know, so working with composts. And I think there's a lot of people in the field of permaculture. I don't know if that's familiar to you. It probably is.
Yep.
They work really well with revitalizing soil. And I think there's also some types of fungi that will clean up toxicity in the soil. But unfortunately, I don't know much more about that. You probably know, JP.
No, not really. What do I do? Aluminium. No, I just will it around. You know, it's like get out. So anyway, there's another one. Is what will take the barium out of the soil? You know, she's not a gardener. She's not a bloody gardener. She's a bodyguard. Well, I suppose, you know, it's the soil of your body, but all that stuff. But, try focusing on the body. She's talking about the body and the changes in the seasons. All right. Okay. Is mint, lemon, tea, turmeric good for us?
Did you say mint?
Mint, tea, lemon, turmeric.
The combination of the three, that would be fine. It's actually a little bit heating if you're using peppermint. Spearmint is more cooling in quality. And it's diaphoretic, so we sweat a little bit when we have that type of mint. Lemon is heating and, helps to cleanse the body, sure. And it helps to alkalize the body. And then turmeric is just wonderful. So you can't really go wrong with turmeric, to be honest. It's so safe to ingest turmeric, and you can have it at pretty good doses. So yeah, that sounds like a wonderful tea.
Okay. How about instead of turmeric, cinnamon?
Cinnamon is warming. So anyone who has, turmeric is warming as well, but cinnamon is a little bit, you want to use that in smaller quantities. Some people have slight allergic reactions to cinnamon. Like you may get like a little bit of a swelling on your lip. But that's if you're taking too much. So yeah, you want to kind of be a little more cautious with cinnamon on a daily basis at a therapeutic dose. You're much better off with turmeric.
Okay, but keep your cinnamon doses low, folks.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless you're working with someone that's specifically having you use cinnamon for something, that would be okay. And of course, use it in your cooking. That's a different dose, you know. But turmeric can be used at a higher dose much more safely than cinnamon can.
Okay. So, I have a stone that I nicked from Giza. He's a Giza nicked to me. All right, what else have we got? I'm looking up here. There's a lot of back chatter. See, I've just got you come through the back chatter here. Greenhouses. Gentle. Alright, well, why not talk about what you were going to talk about when we didn't have a guest? When we didn't have a question. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was thinking a lot about the name of my practice, I call it Little Lotus, and it makes me think of there's three energies in Ayurvedic medicine, in the philosophy, in Sankhya philosophy. And the three energies, these are the kind of like primordial energies of existence, are called tamas, T-A-M-A-S, and then rajas, R-A-J-A-S, and then finally sattva, which is S-A-T-T-W-A. And so these three primordial energies, they work together to sort of hold and create existence, and they're embodied in the symbol of a lotus. So a lot of people, you know, you'll see with a lot of Eastern designs, you'll see the lotus flower and you're like, oh, I wonder what that means. So I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about kind of the meaning behind that, and also how it relates to kapha and spring. So the lotus flower, it grows in water, in the mud, which is very kapha, right? So we think sticky, cold, heavy qualities of mud, that's very kapha, that's very springtime. And so a lotus flower comes up through the mud, and the mud and that heaviness, that darkness, is related to the primordial energy of tamas. And so tamas, you know, is also related to inertia. So all of these qualities, we think of tamas, we think of inertia, sometimes stagnation, darkness, more of a stagnation and a solidity as opposed to anything else. So you have the mud and you have this lotus that starts to grow up from the mud through the water. So the actual motion of it growing, of this lotus flower growing, is related to the idea of rajas. Rajas has to do with movement and action, and even reaction. So let's say in our lives, when we encounter a situation and we react to it with an emotion or with an action, that's all about rajas. That's about kind of how we interact with the world. And then finally, as the lotus opens its bloom, which is often a symbol of enlightenment in the crown chakra, the lotus flower opening, that represents the primordial energy of sattva, which is clarity and stillness and total awareness. So I just wanted to kind of bring that to the listeners, the idea, the symbol of the lotus flower, and how we're all like these little lotuses growing up out of the mud. And we could view tamas as bad. We could view rajas as bad, and sattva is the ultimate. But actually, we do need tamas and rajas in our experience in order to exist. So it's good to kind of hold all three of those primordial energies within us and to appreciate that we have all of them. And there are practices that you can do to cultivate more sattva. And one would be, you know, if we have a tendency to react a certain way to a situation, like a certain person might push our buttons and we tend to react, let's say, with a temper, a little bit of anger or a lot of anger. Rather than reacting, you can take a pause and watch what you're doing, kind of observe yourself. And rather than react unconsciously, you begin to respond to the situation. So that's more sattva. That's more responding rather than reacting. So that's sort of my little blurb on the symbology behind the lotus flower. And just to remind people, when you see a lotus growing, it's a reflection of our own true nature and those three primordial energies. And, you know, we need the tamas. We need the sticky mud, which is kind of where we are right now. Maybe in a lot of different ways, you know, together, you know, as humanity, maybe we're sort of in between tamas and rajas, or maybe we're between rajas and sattva. I'm not sure. Sometimes it feels like all tamas to me, or sometimes it feels like all rajas, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you have a perception. Does it make sense to you? Like, oh, I feel like we're a very tamasic type of existence right now, or we could be heading towards sattva. I mean, a lot of people talk about awakening. So the awakening would be related more to a sattvic quality, going from rajas to sattva.
I can't hook Sanskrit. It just doesn't hook sometimes.
It doesn't.
So
stick.
Yeah, it's like yin and yang, right? Which one is yin and which one is yang?
Oh, I see.
You know, is it possible, you know, and it's like left and right. It's probably the sort of form of dyslexia. If there's a choice that I'm forced to make under stress, I'll naturally choose the wrong one.
Oh, I'm stressing you out. That's no good.
Yeah. So rajas or tamas, I have a friend who talks in these terms all the time. And yeah. I'm like, what's he talking? Yeah. Which one's rajas? Which one's tamas?
Oh, I know.
So.
Yeah.
Just drill it in one more time. Rajas is the activity.
Yes.
Yeah. Tamas is the passivity.
The stagnation, the sort of, the murkiness. Yeah.
And, sattva is the state of divine wisdom.
Yes. And clarity.
So one is right. So one is like too much. One is too little and one is just right. Goldilocks zone. Sattva is Goldilocks zone, right?
Well, sattva would be related, to enlightenment, but we have all three qualities within us. And some people will be more tamasic than others, and some people will be more rajasic, and some people will be more sattvic. And so you can kind of see this within yourself. If you're a person who has a tendency to be stuck and to stagnate and to collect a lot of material objects that just sit there, you have tendencies towards more tamas, and then, you know, it's good to sort of think about ways to help yourself get out of that state. And so movement would be good. Clearing spaces would be good. Engaging with friends would be good.
eBay.
That all helps.
eBay. What's that? eBay.
Yeah, eBay. Get things moving.
Sell some stuff.
Yeah.
I've got some questions. Featherwild asks, other than turmeric, what is a good warming spice that is not drying?
Oh, that's not drying. Mm. That is a good question.
That is a good question.
Because most of them are. Yeah. ginger certainly is drying. You can also, this is where the art of mixing herbs comes in handy, you know? So if you're trying to find a warming herb that is less drying, of course my mind's blank and I'll think of the answer when we're off air, but you could think about, combining a warming herb with a demulcent. So a really great demulcent, unless you have, an allergy, which most people do not, or you have super high blood pressure, licorice root is really great. You can mix that with ginger. And that helps to balance, the drying effects of ginger. Let me think if, yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of a warming. Well, ashwagandha. Ashwagandha root is warming. And it's very demulcent. That's a great nervine adaptogen. So that's really calming for the system. So I'm going to go with ashwagandha. Or combining herbs. You know, that's really wonderful to have herbs help each other out.
Right. Now, here's the thing. And this is, James brings up a point. Shouldn't we all be looking locally for our health instead of looking to something that must come thousands of miles? I.e., what's in your backyard?
That might
be the thing that you need. What's your approach?
A combination of both is wonderful. I actually just attended a conference where, an herbalist from England, Anne Wesley, I can't remember her name now. She's just this beautiful herbalist who, used to feel very, very, very strongly about what is growing in your backyard, which I completely respect and understand and feel is absolutely useful because of the fact that we do have a lot of herbs growing in our backyard. Dandelion is one of them. Violet is another. These are so common and so helpful to us. And they grow also, you know, when they're growing in, you can use them, like dandelion is growing right now. Right now you can use the flower heads. And then when they get a little bigger, you can use the leaves. And then at the end of the season, you can pull up the roots. So yes, it's really great to use herbs, that grow right around you. It helps you to connect to the earth. And also, there is something really special about making your own medicine, either for yourself or for your clients. So I completely agree with that person. And then there's also something to be said for learning about herbs that do grow far away, because you're also imbibing the qualities from that place. Like the Himalayas they're a beautifully powerful place that have their own healing qualities that you may not find somewhere else. So I think a little of both. I use that in my practice. I'll make sure I get good quality herbs that have been tested, make sure there's no heavy metals in them. You can also begin to try to cultivate herbs from far away in your own area. That's also another thing that's being practiced more. You know, our world is big, but yet it's really small. So it's good to kind of maybe do a combination of the both. And that's how I practice. I'll use local herbs when I can. I'll mix traditional Ayurvedic herbs that are mostly in India and regions of the world that have similar climates. I'll mix them with local herbs. So, yeah, that's sort of my answer.
Very good answer. Thank you. The answer is a collection of both.
to sum up in like 2 seconds. Yeah.
In other words, now here's the thing. Here's the thing. And this is the thing that this is a big problem, is glyphosate. What about removing glyphosate from the body? How would you approach this?
Panchakarma. Absolutely.
You'd punch my karma.
Right in the liver. Yeah. No, yeah, panchakarma, using the deeper cleansing practices. So that type of chemical, is it a neurotoxin? I'm not sure. Is it? I'm not sure where it tends to settle in the body. Usually these chemicals will settle in like the nervous system, the liver, the kidneys, the reproductive organs. So there are cleansing practices and herbs that will target those areas. So we talked about dandelion root just a few minutes ago. Dandelion root is a good, fairly gentle cholagogue, so it helps move the liver. And then, you know, if you're working with the nervous system, you're going to need sometimes stronger herbs to help cleanse that system. There are herbs that help protect it ashwagandha, shatavari. Now I'm trying to think of local herbs since that caller or that poster asked about that. Yeah, there's really good adaptogen nervines that can be used. I think chase tree berry is good, but I usually use ashwagandha and shatavari for my nervine adaptogen. I think this, Schizandra berry, good for the nervous system. So yeah, it depends. It's hard to give like a really short answer for that. You have to think about where the chemical is settling in the body. What is it meant to target? Like, how does it kill? How does it kill, life forms? Is it through damage to the nervous system? Is it through damage or does it create, you know, cancer? There's so many different ways to look at it.
It's what they spray on wheat just before they harvest it.
Right.
And
yeah.
It has a drying effect.
Well, I know that it certainly will kill the bees. Mm. I'm sure it affects our reproductive organs because that's the last tissue in our body to be nourished and formed. So we tend to have problems there. Yeah, it's the nervous system is one of the last tissues, but the final tissue to be formed is the reproductive tissue.
As in last in, first out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The nervine adaptogens come to mind. They're usually demulcent, so they'll help with that drying quality. But then you also want to gently cleanse the kidneys and the liver. Cook tea is also another herb that's used. It's difficult because, you know, that's a more potent chemical and that's, you know, to self-treat it could get a little tricky. Not to disempower anyone from trying, but, you just, sometimes we need support.
Just looking down the list now.
I could tell.
Backyard weeds. Yeah.
Backyard weeds are great. You know, you have to make sure that your soil is relatively clear. And you have to think about who's next door and what are they treating their lawns and that kind of thing. You know, chickweed is great. That grows pretty profusely. Cleavers. I'm trying to think of some backyard weeds. Dandelion, of course. Red clover. Red clover is used to clear the lymph fluid, so that could be helpful.
Plantain?
Yeah, I haven't used plantain, but yeah, that grows everywhere. That's good for healing, that's good for alleviating stings, so it must have an astringent quality to it. That would maybe be a little drying. I have to look that up. I haven't worked with plantain.
It's one of those things they put on Facebook posts, yeah. This humble little herb is better for you than, you know. So.
Well, they're all, you know, it's interesting because herbs or any kind of thing used to heal, I think it takes its power from collective intention just as much as what it actually is. So if someone or a group of people have this tradition of using an herb a certain way, there's all that intention behind it that really gives power to it. Just as much as the qualities within the plant itself. I had seen a documentary about Ayurvedic medicine where this Ayurvedic healer, he was in a tiny village and he would just go out and he would take some bark from a specific tree and he would chop it up and he would use this one bark for all of his patients and he would give them varying doses, varying amounts, tell them maybe how to prepare it a little bit different. But he used the same bark for all his patients. Now I'm sure they were not all suffering from the same imbalance, but it made me think that his regular interaction with this tree is really where the medicine was. He kind of probably communed with this tree enough to kind of imbibe his mutual intention, you know, with the consciousness of the tree and to help heal these people. So you have to think about it in that way as well, I think.
I was just clarifying the plantain I was referring to was the weed and not the banana potato fish.
Yes.
There is actually the banana potato thing. I love them.
Oh, very tasty.
Oh,
very,
that's fantastic. Who could imagine a banana that you boiled and it tasted like potato?
Yeah.
Somebody's taking the mickey here. You know, somebody's like, we're going to make something that looks like this, but it's going to taste like that.
Yeah. Well, have you had plantain chips?
Yeah.
or crisps, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a very good example. Not so much the crisps, because those are dried, but, if you roast plantains, that's a very kafa type food. So if you think of, you know, it's dense, heavy, it's moist, it's got a sweet taste, so sweetness is often related to the kapha dosha. That's a really good example. And you like the plantains. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweetness.
It helps if you eat it, you know, if you eat root vegetables, which also have a kapha quality, you know, they help to ground us.
Mm. So. Yeah, I eat a lot of potato.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you have to. I mean, you live in Scotland.
Yeah, I live in Scotland. That's all we have. Potatoes and thistle. Thistle-flavored ice cream.
Yes.
Yeah. What have we got? What's good for a sufferer of multiple sclerosis, asked James.
Yeah. Well, Nervine adaptogens, lots of nurturing and love, and warm oil massages are great. That helps to nourish the nervous tissue. High-quality fats. So if you're able to eat really good quality ghee, which is clarified butter, with your food, organic, unrefined, olive oil. You want to eat a lot of food that is really well cooked and spiced, whole grains. If you digest well, you want to add, nice warm oils to a lot of your food. That will help to, see if you can help with the myelin sheath. You know, myelin sheath is actually fatty tissue, and that's what protects the nerves. So think about like warming, oily, easy to digest, soupy kind of foods that are well spiced, and also doing that daily massage, or have someone help you with that if you feel like you can't, you know, you're having trouble doing it for yourself. Use warm, unrefined organic sesame oil. That would be really nice daily on your skin. That kind of works from the outside in to help protect. Yeah, you need to protect your nervous system. And then ashwagandha would be lovely to do, to intake that on a daily basis. You could even take an ashwagandha ghee. So there are medicated ghees that are made, and you could take that on a daily basis just to help nourish and protect your nervous system.
There you go. So, nourish and protect nervous system. So, back to this, what I realized also is, that, I experienced a very large amount of pain a long time ago. And, after the pain went, and it went very quickly, I got this other thing, is I got a kind of skin reaction.
Mm. Stress.
Yes, a stressful skin reaction. Yeah. And I also got it when I went to Cyprus and they were just about to have an earthquake.
Oh, wow. So you actually had a physical response to a big earth change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a piezoelectric buildup.
I would say. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I could really
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've had anyone come in with a similar situation. I mean, you're quite sensitive.
I'm kind of a sensitive boy.
Yes. You know, I think the more that we become aware of our connection to the earth, yeah, we reflect what's happening, right? So if you went through a life-changing event that was quite physical. I think you're referring to an accident, a motorcycle accident you had. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Led to the pain. Yeah. So there were some alterations in your nervous system. And also probably, some kind of elevation in your consciousness. Unfortunately, it was due to a traumatic event, but that happens sometimes. So then your body can pick up on the frequency of what's happening. I mean, animals have been doing this for a long time. They just flee. I don't think they get a skin rash, but maybe your body was feeling the stress and was like, I think you better get out of here. And your body didn't get out of there, so it reacted with the stress, you know, with the rash, with the hives. Like a histamine response, you know. It's fascinating. It's like people have a trick knee. When a storm's brewing, their knee will start to ache. Have you ever heard of that? That's like a a response that people have. It's just a reflection that, yeah, we're really connected to what's happening on the earth.
Yeah. You know? A couple of days ago, I had terrible backache. In a place like, what? You know, why? Why are you hurting there?
Was it on the right side?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lower, just above the pelvis.
Okay.
And that sort of, I could be a kidney stone.
Kidney stone is quite high. Okay, so if you're at your pelvis and you're just above, that's not where your kidneys are.
Damn fine. Damn good. Anyway.
No, just so you know. Kidneys are quite high. They're like where the back of your lungs are almost. You know, you feel like halfway between your pelvis and your shoulder blade. Mm-hmm. Or actually, no, like one third of the way down below your shoulder blade, you're starting to reach where your kidneys are. So they're way high.
Well, the bottom of my ribs and the top of my pelvis are very, I'm quite squat.
Yeah, really. That's not where your
there's
kidneys are.
There's only about an inch between them. I don't have that sort of, I'm not one of those lithe bodies, sort of square kind of a.
Oh, well, that's more Kappa.
Mm-hmm. I'm that Kappa. Kappa Phi Alpha.
You could be Kappa. I'm not sure.
What are the temperaments? Kappa is what?
Kappa, yeah. Sometimes you talk about slightly Pitta reactions. Kappas tend to be very stable, slow speaking, very sweet, grounded. They speak slowly. They think slowly, but once they understand a concept, they've retained it forever. They're kind of like elephants in that regard. They are not quick to temper. It takes a lot to get them to react. And once they do react, it can be quite large, quite big reaction. But it actually takes a lot to push their buttons.
Uh-huh.
It takes a lot. They love being connected to others. They like home life. You know, I'm speaking generalities.
I mean, that sounds quite a lot like me. Apart from when certain people are around, when I'm not very slow to temper, for some reason.
Well, that could be a pattern that's set in place.
That could be as you're right, that could be a pattern that has been set into place.
And we're not one thing. I mean, you could be a Kappa Pitta.
Pitta. Now, Dave used to use this term pitta.
Yeah, he's probably a pitta.
No, a pain in the ass. P-I-T-A.
Oh, funny. Yeah, that's funny. Mm. That's something a pitta person would say. Pitta people are very fiery, so they're quick to temper.
Mm-hmm.
And tend to be leaders. They like to be in control. They like to have the best idea and have those ideas implemented. And they tend to... just be leaders. And
yeah,
so there's,
I call that a pitta. I call that a pitta as well. Isn't that funny? You know, some of these things, some of these words actually do kind of fit the word, the feeling of the whole term. You know, although they're in Sanskrit, they do still carry.
Yeah, because of the sound. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And then Vata people tend to be, quite mobile and, creative and, hard to pin down, and they just like to go from one thing to another, and they don't always finish what they're doing. And
That sounds like me.
Oh, sometimes they can be a little bit spacey.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just a teeny weeny 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 itty bitty spacey bit.
Everyone has all three doshas within them, and then just in different proportions, and that's what makes up our individuality.
I have a large dosha of that dosha.
Of the Vata?
Of the Vata, yeah.
Okay, you could be Kapha Vata.
Kapha Vata. Yeah. I thought I was Phi Kappa Alpha, but no, I'm just kidding. No, so Kappa, Kappa, I'm going to say Kappa Alpha now. Kappa Vata.
Vata people tend to react quickly and quite extremely.
Oh, that's like Vata fuck. I have to have mnemonics. I'm sorry. I just have to have mnemonics. I hope they're not disrespectful, but
I don't know. That's totally fine. It's totally fine. So like a Vata person may go from laughing hysterically to crying in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Well, they can have a tendency towards anxiety, but they're wonderfully creative.
It sounds like Italians.
Italians are actually quite passionate. I would think Pitta.
Pitta. All right.
Passion. Yeah.
Oh, so emotion and passion are different in that way. Do you say, would they say that the Vata be like, a feeling, experiencing emotion as opposed to a acting outy kind of emotion?
No, everyone acts that all three doshas have acting out emotions. Vatas tend to be extreme. So they sort of go from one extreme to the other. Pittas have, strong emotion that's very focused. That's what I think of passion. I think of like something that's a little bit sustained. A Vata person will not necessarily have a sustained emotion. It would just be more extreme. Like they could burst into tears quite easily, but it will also, they won't be crying for hours and hours. This is very general, but it's just to give you an idea. Whereas if a Pitta person, if they feel angry about something, it's gonna last for a little while. It's not gonna just dissipate quickly and turn into another emotion. It'll last. And a Kapha person will not anger quickly, but when they do, it could last for like forever.
You were going to say a lifetime, last a lifetime. Yeah. But yeah, there are people like that. I know people like that. Yeah, I really know people like that who, you know, just get over it, won't you? You know, yeah. we're trying to evolve into a new age. Look at you.
Yeah.
You're still so sobering over, you know, 4,000-year-old pains and things.
Yeah, like a stubbornness to sort of...
Just a little, you know, stubborn on the like global scale.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a reflection, you know, of what's going on in the mind, so.
Planetary level stubbornness. So, yeah, well, so that's Pitta. Yeah, yeah, that still fits. Anyhow.
I'm a predominantly Pitta, actually.
Are you? Oh, mm-hmm. Bless you.
Thanks. Yeah, but you know, with awareness, you can kind of help to mediate any tendencies that you might have. Not that you want to squelch any emotion, but you know, you just observe yourself a little bit more, and that can be helpful.
It's good to observe oneself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's because that's where it's at. Because we can be born with these temperaments because of our genetics or because of our karma. But
right.
Really, we're just trying to bring it all into a kind of staying kind of in the happy middle medium where no thing is extreme. So
it's
not one extreme of any of the Pitta, Vata or Sattva?
Pitta, Kapha, Vata.
Gita.
That's good.
Nearly.
Yeah, you did very well.
Give me a few more dozen shows, I'll get it. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I know we have maybe a couple more minutes.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, just about.
Just a few more.
Yeah. So it's been fantastic. I love talking to you. It's like.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really fun.
It's, and you know, it addresses a lot of things that are going on for people. And, you know, I feel it in my own body and it's all good to relate. And it's always good to have this, you know, non-pharmacological perspective. That your body will heal itself if you just stop messing about with it.
Yes. Yes, it will. It can happen very quickly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about aligning. Just try to align with what's happening in the natural world as much as possible.
Fantastic. So thank you. Thank you very much, Shailene.
Thank you.
This has been Ever Beyond. Shailene, do you have a website? Of course you have a website. Where can people get, people hire you for money for a thing?
I do have a website. It's my first name and last initial. So it's CHELYNNT.com. And, yeah, there's info on there. I am teaching an online class on May 14th. It's mostly for practitioners and it's about caring for the postpartum mother, after birth, in the Ayurvedic tradition. So, and that's geared towards practitioners. The info is on my website, but yeah, I'm available for consultations, via Skype.
Excellent. So thank you very much. And this has been Ever Beyond. Stay tuned for Frank Jordan and the World Healers Group. Thank you very much, Shailene. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
beyond.